you don't seem quite yourself.
Yeah, well, the message that my parents sent with me, I had never heard the second half before.
Well, I'd say what you wanted that message to mean says a whole lot more about you than what anyone meant for it to mean.
Welcome to the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, look at the DC Cinematic Universe.
Oh, that's beautiful, but none of this matters, you patronizing clown.
Join Garrett.
Sorry, kid. Superman couldn't make it. You got an upgrade.
Matt.
It's a feisty little guy.
And Adam.
He's back.
As they'll look at all films contained in James Gunn's version of the DC Universe.
Okay, this does not look like this is going to end well.
From Amazo to Superman, Supergirl to Mitz Pitalik, and everything in between. These co-hosts will analyze and determine, film by film, and character by character, if DC is actually in good hands.
What did you say?
So prepare to attest to Crypto's behavioral issues, podcast listeners.
Very fun, Willis.
The Percolated Media DC Cinematic Universe Retrospective begins now.
Let's get to it.
Supergirl, released June 26, 2026. Budget on this was $186 million. Box office, $126.1 million. Ouch. And this was directed by Craig Gillespie. All right, guys. We thought in between Toy Story and Rocky, everybody deserved this because this has been a long time coming. I know at least one person on this podcast was really looking forward to it. And here we are finally discussing Supergirl. Adam, what were your expectations going into this, sir?
They were high based on the source material for this. Bilquis Evely and Tom King's Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow. And I do put Bilqui first because I think the art speaks above the script. I think it is a masterpiece of a comic. I think it is one of the best standalone stories that can be read. I think it deals with so many things. I think it's an amazing introduction to the Woman of Krypton. It hits for me on every level. So because of that, and I got, I hate doing it. I don't like to be one of these people because I lived through the comic 90s, but I have three different versions of that graphic novel. So wow. I got the compact version. I got the standard graphic novel trade paperback that I am willing to loan out. And then I got the deluxe edition because it's just gorgeous as hell and bigger. So because of that, and because of who was involved, I had high expectations. Though I'll say, before I watched this movie, those expectations came down to earth based on every marketing trailer I saw for this thing.
Yeah, we're going to get to the trailers. I definitely have words. But before I do that, let's finish our expectations. Matt, as the casual DC fan, what were your expectations going into Supergirl?
I'm actually a pretty big DC fan. But that's because DC should stand for discontinuity, especially when it comes to movies. And I've always sort of cherry-picked what I like. You know, I followed Batman routinely. I was big into Green Lantern when Geoff Johns was writing it. But Supergirl is not in my purview. I've only read her when she's appeared in other crossovers or when she's been in, like, the JLA and the animated show. I watched a couple episodes of her show with Melissa Benoist. I really liked her as Supergirl. I just wish she was in a better show. That was kind of my summation of that and the notion of another movie. I mean, look, they had a lot of there was nowhere to go but up after the Helen Slater movie, and it's been well over 40 years since that came out, so the time was right. But nothing about this movie, outside of the brief glimpse we got at the end of James Gunn's Superman where she appears, I haven't read the material that Adam's referring to, but I know this characterization and to a certain degree, some of the plotting is directly pulled from that. But I thought, with what little we saw, and I like her, Millie Alcott, on House of the Dragon, so I wasn't excited, but I thought this was a justified next step in this whatever continuity we're calling this. The Gunverse, I don't fully know. And I don't think anybody knew, which is largely a large reason why it has not done I mean, even with low expectations, I don't think anyone was quite anticipating how hard this thing was going to tank.
It flopped pretty hard, and I have my theories as to why, but before I get to those, I do want to mention that my expectations for this, if you go back a couple years ago when we did the Superman films and the Supergirl, it was like, okay, well, I thought it was okay for something that you're trying to draw girls into. At that time in the 80s, girls weren't really into comic book films, obviously. So they wanted to kind of draw those in. And I think I was less harsh on that than you two were. But coming into this, I made my thoughts on Superman known. I did rewatch James Gunn's Superman in the lead up to this, and my thoughts still remain the same. I think there are times when it works wondrously, and there are times when he's saving squirrels. I'm like, okay, you're too busy trying to be cute and tell your audience, oh yeah, we're aware of it. We're aware of why him not saving people. So I'm just going to have him save a squirrel because that's what's funny. He went for the joke more times than not. I thought Cornsweat was okay as Superman, but again, I feel the exact same way watching it now than I did when we initially did that review. And the final scene of that, with Miley Aycock storming in and saying, where's my dog? And coming in drunk as hell, did not really draw me in either. But we have an obligation to do this. And when this was gearing up to come out, I asked Jen, do you want to go with me? And she was really on the fence about it. And then that trailer, we went to a movie and that trailer showed up. And I honestly do think, guys, that trailer showing that dog getting shot, I mean, yeah, it is a tease, but Adam, do you think that had something to do with the fact that this did not make that much money?
No. I mean, it's never crossed my mind, but no. I don't think people stayed away because they were worried about the dog. I've heard they just John Wicked this. I don't think that could be further from the truth. No.
Because that was the turning point for her. She was like, I'm not seeing that now. And I said, okay.
Who thought they were actually going to kill Crypto?
You don't know. The way they shoot it, it's weird. Okay. Matt, do you think that has something to do with the box office?
I think it had little to no impact on the lack of success that this movie had. And we got to have a larger conversation now, and I think this is the appropriate place to do so. We've had superhero films be the dominant genre for at least 15 years, darn near close to 20 at this point. And the fact of the matter is now, the days of them being just slapping a cape on someone, putting it in front of audiences and people going to see it, those days are over. There was a period where all these made money, regardless of quality. I mean, we talked a lot about the downfall of the previous continuity, but you had people show up for BVS in the first weekend. You had Suicide Squad do well. Wonder Woman did well. Aquaman did well. But there came a point where it's the combination of oversaturation, which I think is certainly a fair argument, and the larger part is that you have to make your superhero film nowadays, you need to make it stand out from the crowd. And there's two ways I think you can do that. One, anticipation. I think it's very important to compare this to Spider-Man Brand New Day, because that's now out. Spider-Man, we had a 5-year wait from the previous movie. So there was actual legitimate anticipation that was built back up for people to see Spider-Man back on the big screen. In large, I think that's why it's doing so well. There was an actual expectation of waiting and building the excitement. There wasn't this over onslaught of Spider-Man. Whereas Supergirl, this is a year after the previous movie, which did well. But you look at the trailers, you look at the marketing. Outside of saying, oh, it's Supergirl, a character, what's the draw? That's a legitimate question for either of you. Like, what is the draw to make this stand out from any other superhero film?
I think it's the familiarity. I think it's people knowing that character from the TV shows that we've talked about. I watched the Melissa Benoist. I think I watched the first season, and I kind of liked it. I just had other things going on. I couldn't really get back to it. But I think it's the familiarity with the character, and I think it's being in this comic book universe, which, like you said, was so successful for so long. But there needs to come another angle to this. I definitely agree with that. Adam, what about you?
So yeah, I think I probably watched that TV series more than either of us, because I watched all of those CW verses. But yeah, I kind of agree with Matt. It's kind of, other than she wasn't in Superman enough to do, you know, it was more than a cameo. I mean, it wasn't more than a cameo. That's all it was. So you're trying to sell a standalone movie based on what? You got to find a way to sell it. And I think maybe doing back-to-back supers was not the way to do it, because I'm sorry, Superman's cape doesn't reach box office heights. It just doesn't. It never has. So they need to figure out something, but I think maybe starting with back-to-back supers and back just wasn't the way to go.
Part B is also the, let's look at this from the female-led superhero movie angle, of which there's not many. A lot of them have been afraid to embrace femininity in both their themes and their look. You know, Wonder Woman, she's just stoic because Gal Gadot couldn't act her way out of a paper bag, but it's set in like a male-dominated perspective for the most part. Captain Marvel, blank slate because of the story they told, and she was emotionally withdrawn, and that didn't do her any favors. Took a long time for Black Widow to get her movie, and even then, they had to wait till after she died. The only one that I think streamer. Is action. Yeah, and they had to recast her.
But it went to streaming.
Yeah, that wasn't because of COVID.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, I think that Birds of Prey, for all of its faults, and we were all pretty critical of it at varying degrees, I think it embraced Harley Quinn's like messy personality. And it's got that pop confection that I think plays a little bit more to a female crowd. But at the end of the day, the male viewers are the ones who drive the box office. And when you look at Supergirl, it's like, what is there to say? And unfortunately, there's been some pretty disgusting remarks made about the star and her appearance, which I think is way too below the belt for this day and age for anybody.
Fucking despicable.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that unfortunate dark counterpart. But at the same token, there's nothing to make her stand out as far as like, other than saying, oh, she's Superman, but without a dick. To the general audience, because most people don't know Supergirl in the way that they know Wonder Woman. Because at least BVS, that built up excitement for people that hated the movie. A lot of them said Wonder Woman was the best part, so they were excited to see her movie. You didn't have that really with this, because she was such a minuscule role in the previous film.
And I think that has long been a trouble with DC and their films compared to Marvel. And I think it's where Marvel has trouble now. Marvel took the time with that when it wasn't Disney, when it was Paramount and then Universal. They took the time to build characters based on IPs, and I'm saying it that way specifically, that then people became, they cared about them. The big three, the trinity of comics, they're gods in people's mind, you know, and there is an expectation for those big three regardless, and period. And DC can't decide that they're just going to put somebody else in a big screen film without taking the time to build the character beats and find a way to make them connect. You put a Batman movie out, people are going to go see it. Same thing with Superman. You're going to get some people to go see it. I would say you could always do that with Wonder Woman, but we saw what happened with 1984. But outside of the Trinity, you got to find a reason to make people get out there for any other DC property, because outside of the gods, outside of the Trinity, who can name five DC characters? Most can't. Mm-hmm. I can, because I'm sitting next to pull boxes, but I'm not the normies. I'm not who they're trying to get to come in for a movie theater. I'm not who they're spending double the budget that they should have spent on this thing. You know, I'm not the one who screwed up marketing and who can't find a color palette.
Okay, yeah, you've mentioned marketing a couple times. I've given my theory as to what the marketing fucked up on. What is your theory as to how the marketing really screwed this up?
I owe an apology. And I'll do it before we get into this film. And I know we got to get into this film because
no, we don't. This movie's not even that long.
Yeah.
Because Garrett, you said that this was a James Gunn movie, and I took you to task for that. And I was offended. I was like, no, it's not. This is this trailer says that it written, directed, produced, and completely done by James Gunn. You take Gillespie's name off of this, and you ask people who directed this, who wrote this, there is no doubt. Every single person would say this is a James Gunn movie, and that includes from the very, very first trailer. And I think that is a disservice to any director who is going to come in and work for this DC Studios. And I think maybe that's why Mangold hasn't fully committed, even though he was one of the first names mm-hmm. that was dropped at that initial press conference, and so many others. Because this thing just said, hey, this is Guardians of the Galaxy with Rhaenyra Targaryen.
Gillespie and Gunn have been friends since the late aughts, and Gunn specifically brought him in because Gillespie he requested this. And according to Gillespie, James Gunn was on set the first week, and then he pretty much said, it's your movie, because Gillespie's one mandate was, I'll do this, but you leave me alone. Whether that stuck or not, I don't know. There are rumors that it was kind of taken away from Gillespie in the editing room. Maybe we're going to get a huge director's cut, 4K director's cut of this. But there doesn't seem to be any bad blood, but it does feel... And I just rewatched the series, so it just came to mind as I was rewatching it last night. It does feel like Poltergeist with Tobe Hooper and Steven Spielberg.
God dang it. You just beat me. I was going to say, yeah, who directed Poltergeist?
Yeah. It's like people will say, yeah, that is all Tobe Hooper's movie. How many Tobe Hooper movies have that same exact feel? None. I like Craig Gillespie. I liked a lot of his stuff. I liked Lars and the Real Girl. Hell, I am one of the few champions of the Fright Night remake, which we'll probably get to. Like, there are things that he has done, and of course I, Tonya was really well done. There are things that he has done that are very subversive and yet don't talk down to the audience. So I'm not gonna say I was really not looking forward to this movie because of Craig Gillespie's name.
I enjoy I, Tonya, and to me that's about where it lives and dies with me. I mean, come on, this guy did the United States of Terror. He did a Tara Reid show.
Yeah,
man.
That's true. That's a good point.
I mean, I find it hard to believe when I watch this film that this is correct. I mean, maybe because was it Easy Money, Bad Money, that one about the GameStop shorting that he did?
Oh,
like, it does,
right. I forgot. He,
yeah,
did
dumb, dumb money,
dumb money,
dumb money. Yeah, like I see some of the camera moves in that, which it works in that movie. I'm sick of some of the fucking camera shoots that they give us in this one, but I don't see him as a director that has something where you walk out and go, yep, that's a Gillespie movie. Goodness, you know,
he has signatures. Go ahead.
Yeah, and he's been very good at sort of taking like the female gaze that a lot of males have and kind of subverting that. I, Tonya, you know, she was vilified before the movie came out because we had damn near 20 years of her name being an infamy. And for all my bitching about these Disney remakes, Cruella is a better Joker movie than the actual DC Joker movie.
God, I still haven't seen that one. It's sitting right on my Disney
Plus. It's got one aspect I hate. It's a story plot point. But outside of that, I think it was... I thought that was pretty damn good for what it was. But he also made Mr. Woodcock, and he has a permanent demerit on his resume for that, because that is one of the worst, most painful comedies I've had to sit through.
Very bad.
In my life.
And he also had a lot to do with the Pam and Tommy miniseries that came out a few years ago, which I fucking hated, and we have a cast member of that in this fucking movie. I could not get through that fucking show. And so, yeah, he has done bad stuff. Not everybody's resume is spotless. So,
well, so has James Gunn.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the fact, like, he's infallible.
Yeah. So, all right, there's our expectations. Let's get to when we saw this. I did go to this opening weekend. Like I said, Jen said, no, thank you. I don't want to go. I don't want to see a dog in distress. So I said, okay, I'll go. I went by myself, and I had a private screening up until almost to the end of the trailers. And then somebody showed up right before and sat like three rows behind me. So, yeah, I saw this with one other person. Adam, how was your theatrical experience with this?
I went to the early fan first screening because if I was going to see this, I was going to see it with a whole bunch of people who were going to be just like me, excited and boisterous. And I figured that I'd be seeing it twice the first weekend and probably three times before we recorded. You know, like I said, I was really excited for this. And so I was like, let me get that fan screening out of the way first. So that was my viewing, giant IMAX, great seats, the last decent showing that I actually had at my freaking AMC theater. We'll discuss that during the Odyssey.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, it was 2/3 full, but I guess for this film, even though it was the fan first screening, that's about as good as it was going to get. But it was a pretty reactionary crowd as well.
And Matt, what about you, sir?
I had the equivalent of a blind date because it was me and one other guy, and we were at opposite ends of the theater. And there were multiple points where we looked at the doors to see if other people were going to be coming. And then we locked eyes for about 5 seconds and said, oh, no, because both of us were, because it's you would rather be by yourself than have just one other person because you feel like you're being watched. It was very awkward. But I think that's a great microcosm of the box office returns on this movie.
Yeah,
because this thing is a almost historic bomb for a superhero movie nowadays.
It came out, and there was not too much fanfare when it was released. And I'm not even going to mention the comments and things made about the star and other aspects of this film. It's not even worth mentioning. But I was glad I saw it opening weekend, because after that, like, this, it left theaters pretty quickly.
And there was, I will say, I do think this has been a really strange summer. I'm happy for those Utes that have rallied around some of the films that are more their style. Obviously, Obsessions and Backrooms came out of nowhere. I don't think anybody expected what they did. Good for them. Saw them both. I could not get anybody in my household to go see Supergirl with me, but my son wanted me to take him, and I took him to Backrooms. So me and my 15-year-old son watching Backrooms, and me going, what's that? What's that? I'm finally freaking on the other side of that freaking conversation. So I do think that, not through any fault of this film's own, because I can't say it would have done better, though I think it should have been released 2 months before. I think they waited way too long to put this out. The summer box office has been extremely unexpected, I think, except for, you know, two giant films. I think everything else has really surprised the industry.
You know, we always talk about how, like, you know, we always say the box office is dying and movie theaters aren't going to be around. We've had five movies this year gross $1 billion.
Yeah.
Yep. So clearly there is still a demand for people wanting to go to the theater to see movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think DC, Warner Brothers, Gunn Company, they did this movie no favors with the advertising, with there's no big stars to draw people into this. Not that Superman did, but Superman is Superman.
Yeah, its name
that,
alone.
That character's whole career has been casting unknowns.
Correct. Look, as the casual DC fan, I was once a huge fan, as we mentioned, during Superman. I have seen Supergirl in a few comics, and my familiarity with Supergirl starts and ends with Helen Slater and Laura Vandervoort and Melissa Benoist. Well,
and the Flash movie, which people forget she's even in that.
Yeah. And I did forget that until I was researching notes for this.
If somebody wants a really good Supergirl movie, I will recommend, though she's not in the title, Superman Apocalypse, the DC animated movie. Absolutely amazing animated movie, which DC animated movies, especially those first 15 years of them, were tops. But watching Supergirl beat the shit out of Darkseid is absolute chef's kiss. So highly recommended if you want a good Supergirl movie. Go check it out. It's on HBO Max.
Okay, well, we know where Adam's score is going to lean.
Not necessarily. Sorry.
I'm kidding. Let's jump into the movie. We get the DC logo, followed by the opening shot of Krypto as he pees on a newspaper, and the Supergirl title card comes up. What's interesting about this is one thing about James Gunn that we're definitely going to talk about when we get to Guardians and his other movies is his needle drops. Gillespie does have quite a few needle drops here. Some of them I like, some of them I don't. But I like this introduction to Supergirl, because she's going to spend a lot of it trying to be quote-unquote super. Here she is, kind of being a girl, right, Adam? She's doing makeup, and we're actually seeing her kind of be punkish, yet kind of girlish.
I think they're trying to make it extremely clear at the very onset of this that she's not her cousin. I think this entire opening is about she's not Clark. She is not Kal-El. She is not that person. So just in case you didn't see Superman, just in case you didn't see the last little bit or you forgot, they're trying to differentiate her in a big, big way. And I like that. I like a lot of this opening. However, when the credits started, and I mean the printed credits on the screen, and then the title, I audibly said, you got to be fucking kidding me, because this is the Guardians of the Galaxy font that they use. If you've seen Guardians of the Galaxy 3, this is the same font. And that's when I went, uh-oh.
Matt, what'd you think of this opening?
I was getting a little worried, not just because of the title, the font that Adam mentioned, very astute observation on his part, but also, I'm going to be upfront, I don't feel like they're giving the audience any credit. It's almost like they're acknowledging that people forgot she was at the end of the last movie.
Well, how would you have opened it?
Oh, I would not have released this movie to begin with. So let's be perfectly clear on that front. I would have started on Argo City. Okay. I would have just started there.
That's it. You want me to tell you how the comic starts? With Ruthie. You don't get Supergirl till like five pages into the first issue. It's until they get to her family
being killed. That should have been the opening.
It's Ruthie, and it's all about that. And you think, you're like, wait a minute, this is Supergirl. Why am I following this? And then she meets Kara, and you're like, oh, okay. So there's a lot of ways to do it, but I think you could take a shot every time there's a pee joke in this film, and you'd be drunk in 30 minutes.
So Krypto's waking up Kara as Superman Skypes in a happy birthday, and we see that she has a huge hangover from the night before, and we're getting flashes of what happened the previous night. So the opening title is pretty much getting acquainted with this character as she's hungover, and we then see the bad guy of the film with drools all over his head. We, of course, will come to know him as Krem, played by Matthias Schoenaerts. Now, I'm familiar with this guy because of two things. He was in The Mustang and Red Sparrow. Those are the only two things I know this guy from. Adam, who the hell is Krem?
Krem of the Yellow Hills is... So, in the story, he is sent out by the king of this planet because... The king hears that people are just talking bad about him. And so he hires Krem. Krem's just out there. And literally, if he hears that you've talked bad about the king of this planet, he kills you. And that's what he did. Ruthie's father had said, I don't like the king. I think we could do better. That's all it took. And Krem killed him out in front of his family's house. It was nothing about weapons. There was no multiple kids or anything like that. It was just killed her father for talking bad about the king. And then when he got abandoned after his ship blew up, he had to join with the brigands, blah, blah, blah. But he was just in the comic. He's this redheaded, really good looking guy that's like just got a ton of charisma and is amazing to look at. So the complete antithesis of what Schoenaerts is bringing in this film. Because this guy feels like a reject from the Ravagers from the last, I don't know, maybe Guardians 2. But this, I think, was a big problem for people like me that were excited. When we saw who Krem and the way it was depicted, we went, ah, shit.
Well, I look at this guy and I'm having flashbacks to our Bond retrospective because he looks like a guy from The World Is Not Enough.
Looks like Taserface from Guardians.
Like, I've only seen the first Guardians movie. I haven't seen the other two. So, Matt, what do you think of Krem here?
I thought we were watching Phase 1 MCU with this generic-ass villain, because all they have is just, he looks mean, and he's just an object of revenge. Like, he doesn't really have a personality. I don't find him hateable, really, like, in that they have him shoot the dog just to make you feel any semblance of disgust for him. Independent, he is probably one of the worst comic book villains we've had in a very long time.
Well, I thought he was generic, but I wouldn't say that much.
I think that makes it worse. Like, if I'm indifferent towards him, then, you know, because, like, another thing, like, I've seen plenty of, like, subpar superhero movies get saved by strong villains. You know, the Bond formula has done that multiple times. And in a movie like this, which I think is really at war with itself, because I'm going to be upfront, I think this movie is a tonal nightmare to the point where I thought Freddy Krueger was a ghost writer on it. But Ghost Rider, everybody, not Ghost Rider. Different property. But I think, what's his name?
Krem.
He feels like his name, because he feels like table scraps from other characters.
The amazing thing is, too, like, they make little drops about, oh, he can do this. Oh, he's got the strength of this. He's got the... And I guess every little line drop that they give to give him something is shown somewhere in this film, but it's a blink if you miss it thing, and it serves no purpose. None. I mean, you might as well call this guy Ironmonger, because he's fucking forgettable.
Oh, I was thinking, speaking of Guardians, he reminded me a lot of Ronan from the first one. Oh,
God, yeah.
Except the difference is Ronan, by playing it so straight, it's funny because he's in contrast with everyone else. And a movie like this, which is very off-kilter throughout, his generic snarl just adds nothing.
If he was at least over the top, you know, just absolute, just having fun, just craziness, you could do something. But is there anything that distinguishes him and the rest of his gang? No.
No, we're going to get over the top later, but we'll get there. We're told a little about Krem's past to give us a little bit of a background. I was having flashbacks to Ballerina. This is what I thought of. As, you know, he's in this girl's house and he's fighting his way out. Ruthie's screaming, hiding. The place is blowing up behind them. And Ruthie is now looking out where Supergirl's headed. Matt, is that unwarranted? This is the flashes I had, because I haven't read the comic this is based on.
Well, you're certainly not unwarranted in linking those two together. But I also can't speak on a frame of reference, because I haven't read the comic either that this is based on. But this plot, it should be setting up that this is basically True Grit as a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's a revenge journey. Like, that's clearly, especially when you have Lobo in the movie,
yeah,
who you could very easily make your Rooster Cogburn equivalent. I think that direction would have worked better, because with how this movie is characterized and what it has to say about revenge, it's very single-minded, And I don't think it works beyond just the paint by numbers approach they go with.
That's exactly been the way that the source material, that the way Tom King wrote it, is. It is very much to True Grit, like to a fault, but it is beautifully drawn and illustrated that it's True Grit in space in a way that's just stunning. And if they would have honed closer to that, I think it could have been a success. But that is very much what the story is. And unfortunately here, I feel it's lost.
So we're cutting to Supergirl going to this bar, and she declares that year 23 will be the best year yet, even though it's not a high bar to clear, as she says. All right, Miley Alcock, I'm not going to say I was worried, but again, my lasting impression coming into this was the end of that Superman movie. So I'm thinking, okay, I don't have high hopes for this. I'm not a House of Dragons watcher. I stopped Game of Thrones maybe midway through the fifth season. I don't have much frame of reference for this girl. I like her in this. I think she's good. I like her arc in this. I like the way she plays it. I think this chick's a good actress, and I think she plays this part pretty well.
When they cast her, I was a little skeptical. I know her from House of the Dragon, and everybody's like, oh, she was so good in that. I'm like, slow your roll. She's in the first three episodes. Maybe four. Yes, they do a giant time jump. The entire first season does like three or four different time jumps. So she shows up in flashbacks for like 2 minutes here and there throughout the second season, but she's in it for three, maybe four episodes. That's all. She's great in those episodes, but that's all she's in it for.
Okay.
I think she is really good as Kara Zor-El. I think by going a slightly different way, doing a different tone, not doing the Slater thing, I think this is actually a really strong way to show this character. And I do like that it's a complete different way to look at Krypton, Argo City, and I think based on what we're going to get with Man of Tomorrow and the potential future out in space of the DC's films, I do think it's important to have one that's different, and I think she can bring an acting ability to this role that I think all the other fan castings that they do, where all they want is blondes and tits, I don't think they could have done it. I think she actually does a really good job with this.
I think physically she has the right instincts. Playing it as like this hungover kind of, like, the whole movie is about she has to find a reason to care in life again. It's kind of like Han Solo mixed with Jack Sparrow. I think that's the approach she had. But that comes out of her physical performance. I think when it comes time for her to deliver a lot of the dialogue, I don't think she's going that deep. All of her line readings, most of them are pretty straightforward and not much in the way of enunciation. And I can't even say she's just drunk. No, it comes off to me as more as that, like, just boring, unassured screen presence. And I don't think that was the right approach, given the experience this character is supposed to undergo on the page. But that leads me into my larger criticism. I think this movie is poorly written from a dialogue standpoint. And that's the one thing I will find James Gunn. I know it's not his movie, quote unquote, but if he did do punch up on this, clearly he was punch drunk.
He does have to do a once-over on this. I mean, he does have to clear it before it goes before screens. And you know what, guys? You guys are criticizing a lot of the things that I've criticized in the past with this stuff. I'm not seeing much difference. And I think that's a big problem. I'm not seeing much difference between this and the movie that we reviewed last year. Except for the fact that I'm actually enjoying this more than I was Superman. I'll go that far. But as far as dialogue goes, I will agree with you, especially when we get the appearance of a main character pretty soon.
For all the talk about we're not going to put a movie out until the script is great and him championing certain people, I'm sick of the lies. I'm sick of just shining up a shit for the press bullshit that now I will say James Gunn is doing, because this woman did a shitty job of adapting a great story and she should be held account for it. She's supposed to have like three other jobs here at DC. Nope. I don't want a single one of them. The dialogue is crap and the way that this thing is paced is crap. This could have been part of the editing, but no, just piss poor writing. I'm sorry.
Especially because there's only one credited writer on this, and her pedigree is not very extensive, and the credits she has are mostly television, which is fine. Like, you know, because you're not
coming into it
with baggage, but what in her pitch or her past work would lead you to believe she was the right person to write this?
And coming up with a story credit as opposed to coming up with an outline is not the same as coming up with a script, and the script is where this fails. I think the story is there, but that's because she didn't write the story. Tom King did.
Well, she's also and we talk about this with these huge, huge films, she is the credited writer, but this goes through at least a dozen hands before it goes on screen. So there are times in between her putting pen to paper and this going up on screen that it could have been changed. And again, I'm not seeing the disparity that you guys are seeing. I just find this to be tonally pretty much the same as we've gotten with every James Gunn movie, except again, this time I'm enjoying it more. So we get another needle drop as Kara puts her bottle down and makes her way through the bar. Ruthie enters and screams her purpose is to seek revenge on Krem, who murdered her family. She says she needs a skilled trucker, and Kara says it's not her monkey or circus. So, Adam, is this pretty accurate to the comic where she is just rejecting this hero's journey?
I mean, this scene here in the bar and the way that it goes all the way up until Crypto and everything else is pretty damn straight. And that's pretty much the first issue. Ruthie goes into this bar, and this is in the comic. This is the first time we see Kara. She's literally drinking at the bar. She's got the, can we go ahead and call it the foreskin overcoat?
I wasn't going to.
God dang. God, it looks so bad.
Took that off she took that off Randy Marsh.
But in the comic, Supergirl's there at the bar. She's got the overcoat, and it's open enough that she's actually wearing the suit underneath it. But Ruthie comes in, and she does her speech, which this part I like. Ruthie is so just innocent, and you know she feels like she has, you know, righteousness on her side. It's the whole, you know, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. I am looking for the seven-fingered man. It's just, I like that because she plays it so earnestly that even though it's goofy, I have fun with it. Especially when later on in the movie, that Kara is literally mouthing along with her because she knows mm-hmm. she's just going to repeat the exact same speech. So I like that. And yeah, this is exactly how it happens in the comic. She comes in, somebody tries to steal the sword, and it's not till then that Kara starts to get involved. Drunk as shit, but beats the shit. Yeah, this is beat for beat the same. I do like this scene. I think it lightens up quite a bit. I have fun with it. I think the color in this film is abysmal. It looks like the Golgotham shit monster from frickin' Dogma. Like, put some color in your films. This thing is 20 different shades of brown. That's my biggest problem. Or not my biggest, but that is a giant problem. But I also like as soon as you go into this bar, you realize we're going to get practical aliens in this. And I think that's kind of cool. You know, there's a lot of practical rubber masks and shit, and I appreciate that we did that.
Get a Dogma reference in this podcast. Ruthie says that she will offer her blade as payment, as she's told that she will need someone with enormous power to defeat Krem. Kara goes to retrieve the sword that a creature stole as she tries talking her way out of it, but she says that she can talk less as she grabs the sword and is flung back and she starts bleeding. So on this planet, I'm curious about this because we're going to get a green moon later. So on this planet, she's like mortal, Adam? Is that how this goes?
Yeah, they say it like twice before we even get here that she's coming to this planet with a red sun so that she could get drunk for her birthday. That's what she has to do.
Okay. So she can't get drunk unless she's on this planet because if she drinks while she's full power, it won't work.
It won't do anything. Okay. So it's,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. She gets in a little brawl as she's winded. I am liking, and this goes back to my liking with Superman 2, where, you know, I like seeing these superheroes mortal. You know, I like seeing that she's getting winded as she's fighting. It makes things interesting, and it's always hard to make superheroes interesting, right? We talk about that all the time, but I think they do a pretty good job here of, yeah, she's struggling with this fight.
God, I'm going to sound like an asshole during this whole review, so I feel like Garrett for a change, but my biggest knock is that nothing in this feels inspired. And I get, like, you know, the superhero genre at this point, every trope has been told. I mean, how many big ones have we seen about them losing their powers? Including ones that have super blank in the title. And I think it's good that she feels a little bit depowered compared to Superman, because that's one of the biggest knocks on that character for a lot of people. But I don't get enough of it. And you have a very easy device to explain that she's shit-faced all the time. But even that goes in and out because of all the world hopping they do. And apparently all the world hops they do exist in a world where color grading is non-existent. Because this is one of the ugliest movies I've seen in a long time. Like, this made me miss Solo.
A movie I didn't have problems with the color on.
Let me reiterate. I am the one who is bitching about ugly colors.
Mr. Colorblind over here. Crypto jumps in to help as Kara puts the blade right into the creature. She retrieves the blade and gives it to Ruthie before saying now she's going to bed. We cut to the next morning as Kara wakes up and receives a phone call from her old cousin, Kal-El, who asks when she's headed back home. He tells her that the more she heads off the planet, she'll never find her strive or people. And then there's a knock on her door as she hangs up. So, Adam, was it really necessary to have Superman keep showing up? We talked about during Supergirl, they did want Christopher Reeve to make cameos in that. Why do we have Superman just hanging around? Just to make the connection that, yeah, they are connected?
Desperate. Okay. I think every single Skype call with Superman is them being on set or starting up for Man of Tomorrow, James seeing the dailies for this and going, uh-oh.
Really? Like, you don't think this was planned?
No, not at all.
I don't think so either, because it's also insulting that you don't have enough confidence in the character for her to stand on her own, that you're almost begrudgingly inserting Superman in to kind of prep her up in the spotlight. Like, that's kind of disingenuous.
See, there is an arc for her, though, and he shows up at the end. I do think that that he was meant to be part of that arc. I'm not seeing that, guys. I think this was planned. Maybe that's just me reading too much into a cinematic universe instead of a comic book universe. So Kara answers the door, and it's Ruthie, who's once again here to ask for help. Kara goes to pee as Ruthie asks if her ship was attacked. Ruthie pleads her case, but Kara says that she's not going to follow her on her revenge plot to turn her into a vengeful spirit. Kara lets Crypto outside as Krem shows up. Crypto runs towards the trailer as he gets shot with a dart and Krem takes off. This was awful, though not as bad as I was expecting when I initially saw that trailer. But God, did I hate seeing this.
Oh yeah, it's tastefully done, as well as you could do. It's quick.
Yeah.
It's a dart. It's not like he gets drop kicked or punched like you would see in some of these other types of films. But it's a very flimsy plot to get the ball rolling.
Well, it's straight from the comics, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, on it, it's similar where they don't have their ship and he's joined. So they need to get a ship to get off the planet. And by coincidence, you know, they're going to steal Supergirl's ship. It's a little different in the comic, but it's similar. I mean, he doesn't go through eating cereal for whatever fucking dumbass reason that was. God, I hate watching people eating films. But it's largely similar. Yeah, it takes her ship completely, just takes off, and because Crypto's going to stop him, and it's the same. It's with an arrow. It's with that part's all the same, little different. And it's in the comic, it's a harrowing moment, and in the movie, it's a harrowing moment. You know that she loves his dog. She doesn't. If there was anything, I would start. Maybe I would have a longer opening montage of seeing nothing but Kara with this dog.
Yeah, you know, see just how she met Crypto in the first place.
I mean, because we get it later. And you know she loves the dog, but imagine if you had all that feel before this happened, not telling us it later. So, yeah, but it's a moment. I mean, you know what's going to happen. I don't think you could have hidden it in the trailer because it is the impetus for Kara going on this journey.
I also have a theory that at one point in the script, Superman was going to get shot with a kryptonite bullet, and she had to go on a rescue to go save him before he dies. And then they changed it to Crypto because the test reels from Superman. Crypto got a lot of good responses, so they did a quick pivot.
I gotta say, when I initially saw this, it's always tough because the three of us are animal lovers, and yep, it was tough then. Let me tell you, watching this last night after my last couple weeks, ooh, I had to pause this a couple times, guys. I gotta say, it was tough.
Yeah.
Kara is told... Go ahead.
I will say I do love Crypto. Every time Crypto's on screen, I love Crypto.
I like him more here than I did last year, that's for sure.
I'll agree. I do too.
Kara is told that since Krem escaped, the antidote is located inside the Brickens, who use it as an interrogation tactic. So without the antidote, there's nothing they can do, and Crypto has 3 days left. Kara heads out, and Ruthie sees an opportunity to once again ask Kara for help, since they both need Krem for different reasons. But Kara is still saying no, as she says that she's not going to let Ruthie's revenge plot get in the way of her saving her dog, and then she heads out. Kara sets her watch for 72 hours as a ship lands and Kara steps on it. So we have a little ticking clock here, don't we, Adam?
We literally have a clock.
Yes.
And it's 72 hours from what? I know they give a line that explains and she sets it. She has this much time that's on the clock. Man, dealing with days in space always make me... I just want to sit down with Neil deGrasse Tyson, get drunk, and laugh at the absurdity of this kind of thing when you're talking about multiple days when you're going to different galaxies and planets, because there's no such thing.
We should be talking about this like the airplane scene in Gremlins 2. Like, it's that level, because, like, okay, if you travel faster than the speed of light, which most superheroes can do, especially ones that fly. Shouldn't that adjust the time?
I am okay that she sets a watch there and says, I have this much time, buddy. But God, the absurdity of it. Every time. It's not just this film, but every time.
And this was kind of odd, too. An intergalactic bus just yep. kind of threw me off. It kind of reminded me of The Last Starfighter a bit, especially as she's sitting next to this creature that looks like Grig from that film. That's my frame of reference. We see that Ruthie has also made her way on as Kara talks down the creature yelling at her. She sits next to Kara, calling her a friend, even though she doesn't know her name, as tech pirates make their way on to rob them blind. And we get these little spiders. These kind of reminded me of those little spiders from Minority Report, which I also just rewatched a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I was thinking of those little gremlin bots from the opening of Revenge of the Sith.
That too. Yeah, good point. Kara grabs Ruthie's sword and gives it up, telling Ruthie that she kind of has a plan. She shows a device that, allows her to make a digital image of herself? What is this thing that she has?
Yeah, she's got a holographic projector.
Okay, yeah.
No, I don't know. That's my only explanation.
Adam, do you know what this is? Do they explain this?
This little thing that it does, that I don't know, it's like they teleport 3 feet this way, that way, mm-hmm. up, down. I'm sure this looked really cool on a storyboard. This is original. So guess what? This is what they came up with for an original action sequence. Not very good. Gotta say, it has its moments, but I can't stand the look of these people because I swear to God, I've seen them 3 times already in James Gunn movies, and I can't. That's what pisses me off is I'm looking at this going, Gillespie, bullshit. Because I've seen this. I've this is the planet that they did in Guardians 3. Like I'm angered when I watch this. But
and they're Michael Rooker's gang.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. But there's some fun in the way that this is shot until it's not. And that's the problem. And I'm like, okay, I have fun, and then I'm like, nope, you did something weird, or you changed it, or you went too long, or you got stupid with the music, or just one too many fart jokes that I'm like, come on, man, do better.
I was thinking of, you know, that scene in Force Awakens when after Han and Chewie get on the Falcon, there's those guys that come with like the octopus thing.
Uh-huh.
Reminded me of that. Like, I was having a lot of
the hentai monster
Star Wars comparisons in this.
So this fight's going on as Kara barrels through them, and she asks the captain to get closer to the yellow sun. The captain refuses, so Kara puts on an astronaut suit and proceeds to get blown backwards. She's just kind of hanging in the sky as the sun appears and re-energizes her. We're going to see this a couple times in this film.
At least she doesn't do a Jesus pose like Zack Snyder's movies.
I thought of that too.
I was like, oh no.
She gets back on the ship only to be blasted. She's pursued until she fires lasers out of her eyes and takes out the ships. And then we cut to her on the outside, healthy as a horse. And we then cut to Ruthie getting told how Kara has the powers that she does. And then she tells her that Ruthie has worn her down to go after Krem. So she's finally to the point where, okay, I will come help you. Adam, is this pretty much how it happens? I'm going to keep referencing enough. To you. I'm going to keep referencing.
I know. And perfectly fine. Like I said, if anybody's interested, if anybody has any fun in this film, you will not be disappointed. A little bit, like I say, the scene, it's there, but not this way. I like the way this is done where she, you know, she's getting blasted. Though, I swear to fuck, I am sick and tired of watching these people float in space in the exact same freezing.
Like, speaking of Guardians.
Yeah.
Speaking of Guardians, speaking of Mary Poppins Leia. My God, man. But when the sun comes up, same with Superman, you get that yellow sun, you get a little bit of a score, which has been almost non-existent in this thing anyway. Right on. Give me badass powered up Kara Zor-El and I have some fun. So when she goes Supergirl here, I'm in.
That's just white people with our own yellow sun. It's called Mountain Dew.
Kara goes to get snacks and is interrupted by a Seth Rogen voice creature who tells Kara to not abandon her daughter. And I guess, I mean, Seth Rogen, big part of that Pam and Tommy miniseries that I talked about earlier. Craig Gillespie gave him a call, said, would you mind doing this? And I'm pretty sure he just kind of did it over the phone because it's this voice character. But I had to look it up later. He's uncredited. And yeah, this is Seth Rogen here.
Yeah, one of the best things he's done. And I watched the studio.
Kara starts asking where Krem is, offering them their intact spinal cords if they tell her. So they do, saying that he's on the planet Belki, scavenging for girls to help them continue their race. So we have a human trafficking plot on our hands here. I was not expecting that, I gotta say. Adam,
we have fragments of one.
I had to be reminded after I saw this film that this was actually a part of the movie. Though Okay, this is one of those moments. When they get here to Planet Bilqui, my theater erupted in cheers.
Because you were by yourself.
I got to the bottom of my popcorn bucket. So the artist for the book is Bilqui Evely. Oh. And so actually dropping her name in here is the planet. Like, people recognized it in the fan screening and went nuts. And I was one of them. Now,
what the fuck, did you see this at Comic-Con? Like, I know.
Being that the colors, and I'll send you guys some photos, being that the colors are such a major part of it, if I was her, I'd be pissed to have my name on a planet that looks like this.
I don't know, guys. This is PG-13, and I'm glad that this is kind of just in passing and not in our faces the whole time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't want that in a superhero PG-13 movie. That's something Zack Snyder would have done.
Well, it's also weird because the Guardians movies, not to spoil the second one, but the whole thing of like abducting kids to achieve procreation to a certain degree, it's a big part of the second movie.
So he's playing the same beats then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty close.
And this is a change because there's one of the issues, they go to a planet where they meet an entire race of purple skinned aliens that are all happy and everything is wonderful and perfect. But through the course of it, spoiler, 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 you realize that these people have only lived the life they have because they completely wiped out an entire different colored race of creatures that used to live on the planet. It's a trauma issue that just really hits that you couldn't do on screen. So they tried to do a different way to bring trauma and people being evil to one another, but this doesn't, I don't know, I don't feel this works. I don't feel like the people they meet work. I don't feel like the reasoning that Prem joins the brigands for the brigands to do, none of it makes sense. Oh, they're just kidnapping girls for their own breeding facility. Okay, what, so they're Kryptonian? Because that's what Krypton did.
Well, it's also weird because like Gunn, I think this was a problem with Superman for me, were the geopolitical elements he tried to incorporate. You had the whole subplot in the last movie about Israel and Palestine for all intents and purposes, and now you have sex trafficking. But he seems almost self-aware that he's doing what, for all intents and purposes, is a superhero franchise. And because of that, these elements kind of disrupt the fun. But at the same time, they feel superfluous in the grand scheme of things, almost like they're apologized to be like, wait, our movie has to be about something. So let's try to find something to incorporate, even though it's so half-baked, I might as well expect it instead of Seth Rogen to shoot him and Dave Chappelle.
It doesn't play a part of the movie that matters. It's just something that's occurring during the course of this film.
That I will agree with you guys on. There's so much going on, you really didn't need it. But I guess she needed even more impetus to go on this. Like, it's really weird the way it's unraveled.
Especially because she already agreed to do it.
Yeah.
Like, this is what she would have introduced if she was still
on the fence.
And this was the thing that made her realize, like, oh, there's something bigger than me. But she's already had that resolution, so this doesn't have the impact it should.
No, and I think they were trying to find a way to show that Krem is as evil as you could possibly be, because there's a major change that happens towards the end of the film that I think they needed to be like, he's evil. What's the most evil thing you could do? Kidnap and sex traffic kids. Maybe the world's tired of hearing about it. And, you know, as messed up as that is, I just don't think it's delivered well.
Yeah, it's like when Marvel was writing G.I. Joe. And stick with me, everyone, this is going somewhere. You guys know what Cobra Commander's origin is in the Marvel comics? He was a used car salesman. And he started his own Cobra, and to show that he's evil, there's literally a panel of him just kicking a dog.
Yeah, I remember that. Kara gets Ruthie a suit that she swears she's not freaking out in as she falls while looking like Big Hero 6.
This is fun. Moments like this, I laugh, and yeah. I have fun. I'm glad they dropped some in.
Kara is telling Ruthie about her familial connections to Superman, and Ruthie asks how much older he is than her. They go to a lounge as a creature sits next to them and asks how much Ruthie is worth. When the creature doesn't give up information on the brigands, she dials up over the top and offers to arm wrestle him.
Yeah, I was thinking of The Fly.
That too. Oh, yeah, the resolution of this for sure. But I swear, if she had a hat, she would turn it backwards here. But of course, this is more like The Fly, as you mentioned, Matt, as she damn near takes the creature's arm off. I kind of like this, actually. This was kind of cool, and I liked her attitude during the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
The two girls have a ton of laser sightings on them as Kara compares the situation to the Titanic, and we get an all-out fight to another needle drop. Adam, how'd you feel about this one?
Dig this, because I like that it kind of shies away from it. You know, Ruthie's ducking behind. It's all happening. I think there's some fun to be had with this. This is, though, when you shoot the scene, I'm like, how the hell did you spend $160 million? Because you don't get to see this fight. But this is the silly fun that's having me smile and go along with. I like this scene. I think it's good. It gets broken a little weird, but I like this.
Yeah, I definitely see editing issues with it. Ruthie questions how discreet Kara is being, and Kara responds, since her dog's dying, she's not thinking clearly.
Good line.
Yeah.
Good delivery.
Definitely.
The way she does that, every now and then it comes back to it, she's like, it's my dog, and you realize what she cares about.
All right, guys, here we go. So she's still asking about the brigands as Rob Zombie shows up to dig through some ditches and burn through some witches to slam in the back of his Dragula. Aren't there any more fucking actors out there? Why do these comic book studios reuse the same fucking actors in different roles? It would be like...
No, here's the answer. This is the character he should have played all along. Him as Lobo has been fan cast as far back as when Jason Momoa was Conan the Barbarian.
Yep.
It would be like if back in the 90s when New Line had all the horror icons, New Line would have said, hey, Robert Englund, come play Leatherface for a film.
Hey, hey, hey. And in their defense, Universal, Bela Lugosi played Dracula and Frankenstein's monster.
That's true. Okay, obviously I'm not familiar with this Lobo character. The last Lobo I was aware of was one half of a group that sang La Bamba. Please, someone enlighten me with this character. Adam, tell me the background of this character, please. And Matt, you too.
He's Lobo. He's DC Deadpool. I mean, is how most people are going to say it. Okay. He's the last Sarzarian. He literally killed the rest of the race of his people. He's the only one. He can regenerate himself from a single drop of blood. So he's basically immortal. He's Deadpool. He's a bounty hunter. I mean, he comes from before, but he's got Kratos's blades, you know, on his hands. He's a badass. There's some times that he's really cool. He's got some good comics. He's got some bad comics. He's been a Superman foe quite a bit. Okay. He's fought with the Lanterns. He's done some cool stuff, but he's an also than. I know he's like, I want my own R-rated movie. I don't know if you could sustain it. Lobo's always a secondary character. I know people are probably yelling at me for that, but I'm going to keep it, you know, straight. Look, I have some of his ongoing runs, and those ongoing runs last about as long as Rob Liefeld's ongoing runs, like canceled by issue 4. So he's a cool character. He's fun. But you got to use him sparingly. And yeah, he wanted this role forever. He was the role that it was made to be. He says, and God knows that I heard it 20 times in every press interview, the day that I heard James got the job, I just texted him one thing, Lobo. Because they put him out to promote this movie for somebody that's in it for two cameo scenes.
You say he's a main character. He's a background character here. But you put it perfectly for me. When you said that he is DC's Deadpool, it makes total sense to me.
R-rated, kills, R-rated, bounty hunter.
He's a mix of Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yep.
In a lot of ways, just without, he doesn't have the fourth wall breaking that Deadpool is known for, but he's always worked best as a freelance bounty hunter that just shows up as a third party to cause chaos, like his own self-interest. Whenever he's led his own comic, I've never especially cared for him. And I've never liked when they've tried to make him more heroic, like in the Krypton show, which so I did watch that, everybody, because I was curious.
Same here. It was not a bad show.
I watched the
pilot. Say it was a great show, but it wasn't bad.
And they've been trying to make a Lobo movie as far back, like Guy Ritchie was going to do it at one point.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yep.
And The Rock was going to be Lobo, but I guess they dangled Shazam in front of him, and he went to that. If you remember, Michael Bay was going to direct it at one point.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Think Michael Bay's sensibilities fit Lobo pretty well. Like, that's one of those things. I always said Michael Bay would have been an interesting choice to do the first Captain America movie. I still stand by that. But I think Lobo and Bayhem, especially with Momoa, that I could see that working. Just don't make it 2.5 hours. Tell him to hire a decent editor. And don't let him write the goddamn movie, please.
Yeah, and he's one of those 90s characters that just blew up, and he's style over substance. And I know before that, I know he was Omega Man. Don't come at me, everybody. I got my bona fides, but let's be honest. He broke through with just the 90s style and comics aesthetic.
All right, thank you guys for enlightening me, because I was really confused. Lobo takes a shot and says Ruthie is worth a lot of money as she pleads her case to him. He grabs Ruthie and asks if she knows who he is, and Kara plays the Valley Girl card to try to get them out of it. He calls them super useless and then walks out the door. uniform. Two villagers then tell the girls to meet them at their house and tells them to wear the cloaks that she's holding. They go to the house as Ruthie asks if Superman is like her, as in grumpy and rude. Kara declares that Superman starts to be light as he hadn't been through what she had been through. Great line, well delivered. That is a great distinguishment between her and her cousin. Adam, do you agree with that?
I do. I think it's important. I think it's also true. Like, this is showing the difference of what trauma can do to somebody and how you overcome it. And just being different. You don't have to be the same. And just because you're rough doesn't mean you're bad. You know, you can do good things and still be hurt. You can still have those wounds. And we don't all heal the same way. We're not all raised the same way. I wish it had been told that story better, but I love that part of it.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more of the, like, I wasn't raised by good-hearted farmers in Kansas.
Yep. Where were you raised? On a farm?
She then says that she's not from this planet. She's from Krypton, and we get the backstory when Krypton exploded yet again.
Yeah, I was wondering when we were going to see this.
Yeah, me too. And Adam hit it right. If you're going to do this, do it in the beginning.
That was Matt.
Oh, was that Matt? Okay.
I wonder if they didn't want to because both Superman 78 and Man of Steel did it, and Supergirl.
And this is how the book is paced.
Is it? Okay, so they do this in the comic as well.
They do it multiple times throughout. Like, every other issue really expands on what she went through growing up.
Okay. So Kara says that it blew up 8 years before she was born. She says that she didn't know that Argo was unlike any other planet. She considered herself lucky, but as with anything, their luck eventually ran out, as we see the series of events that took away her parents and led her and Crypto to where they are now. She then tells Ruthie that revenge isn't going to lead her to where she needs to go. So this is a huge plot that keeps coming up throughout the course of the film. Will Ruthie kill Krem, and will Supergirl allow her to do so? I'm sorry. I like this arc. I think it's very well handled.
I do too. I think this is something to think of. How do you deal with your trauma? How do you deal with somebody that's wronged you? Even if somebody killed your family, aren't you justified? This could be the capital murder discussion, you know, or capital punishment. You know, this could be any type of retribution. You know, what is an eye for an eye? And does it heal you to do so? This is kind of part about being a superhero. You know, and that doesn't mean it's all the same answer. You know, it's one of the greatest lines I love from a Wonder Woman comic is, you know, we don't have the same villains, Bruce, because my villains stay down. Yeah. She makes it clear she kills it. So I love that not everything is black and white.
Yeah, but I also, to that point, I've seen this story told in so many better avenues. Not just that, Daredevil and the Punisher, you hit him and they get up, I hit him and they stay down.
Yeah, it's True Grit.
Yeah, it's that too.
But also, I know, because
I had this spoiled, because I had a friend who loved the book, and he told me the big change at the end. And when we get to that, I'm very curious to hear Adam's take, because my friend was not happy with how it was changed.
Kara checks Ruthie and then says that she's going to go check on Crypto. She goes to the kitchen and has a drink with her housemates, which probably classifies her as one of the dumbest comic book characters we've ever seen portrayed on screen. Jesus Christ, this was fucking stupid. She drinks some shitty milk and she's told that they're getting one girl for two girls in return. Oh my God. You spend half the movie trying to make her identify with their audience and you do this? I hated this plot.
Yeah, it makes her seem stupid, seems mean, ignorant, incapable, and that just doesn't seem fair to this character. That seems weird to say. This film doesn't justify her being ignorant to this kind of thing happening.
Man. Right. If Superman did this, I'd buy a little bit more because he's not ignorant, but he's too optimistic. He's too optimistic. That's his flaw.
He's Kansas. She's
cynical and bitter and just beaten down by life to do something like this.
Yeah. I feel like she would look askance to anything like this.
Krem makes his way in and tells Kara that he heard she was looking for him as she tries fighting him to no avail. She asks for 1 second as she re-energizes herself again and punches her way out. Ruthie tries helping as Kara just grabs her and jumps out the window. Krem yells at the couple as Kara explains to Ruthie that she was poisoned. Kara once again springs into action as she punches a few guards out and takes out more with her heat vision. And then here comes Rob Zombie to once again interrupt the proceedings as he rides his bike through some guys before getting flung off. So this is his whole MO in the comic, Adam, is to just kind of show up whenever he wants.
Pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, he like Justice League will be, you know, capturing somebody and he'll literally show up and kill them because he's got a bounty on him. And then he'll just like fuck off into the stars.
No, he is to DC what Star Wars fans think Boba Fett is.
Interesting.
Yeah, I do think he's going to have a major role if I think what they're going to do with Man of Tomorrow does.
They call it, we'll talk about that at the end here. They call each other the dits at the dive bar as we get some more fights with Lobo, even using his chain, which was kind of neat. I liked seeing that.
Yeah, I like Spawn.
Yeah, you're one of, I think you're the only person on this podcast who does.
Yes, it's me and Todd. It's
because we both come. Look like they both shop at the same Hot Topic.
Krim continues to stalk Kara as Lobo gets pissed that his bike is getting stolen. Kara sends Ruthie on her way as she leaps to the sky to try and locate Krim and the antidote. Ruthie once again interjects herself as Kara tells her to hide. Ruthie is upset that Kara won't let her kill Krim, as Kara says it'll live with her the rest of her life, to which Ruthie says, "You mean like you and your drinking?" Kara and Ruthie once again separate as Kara goes up for some rays. She jumps down and goes on the hunt for Squidward. Really? That's this character's name? Squidward?
Yeah, great. I remember hearing that in Infinity War. Same joke, different room, cheap movie. Sorry, Rocky Horror.
I don't remember Infinity War at all. She tells him to tell her where the Brickens are as he just gives them up. Did I miss a scene? How did we end up here?
Ugh. Oh, from here on out, the movie feels tremendously fragmented.
Definitely.
You know, they were scared to release a 2-hour movie. Like this thing, they chopped it down to try to be like, look, it's only 1:40, everybody.
Squidward drops Kara off as close as he'll get her as she collapses from the green sun, which can't be good.
It's not, because it's not easy being green.
And I do remember this. They did this in Smallville a couple times, too.
I mean, they have, and I'll give them credit, they established and they've mentioned the different suns. But every time they've gone to a new system, it'll name the planet and it'll say yellow star system, red star system. So there's things out that I'm like, okay, at least it's not out of nowhere.
We see her getting dragged as we cut to her waking up with Clark over her, welcoming her to Earth. He says that he doesn't speak Kryptonian, and he keeps saying louder and louder that he wasn't raised there. This was the one time I laughed at what Corn Sweat was doing, because he's like, why am I talking louder? They start walking around the fortress as Kal-El talks about the virtues of bowling and Kansas, and then he tells her that she's going to love it here. He concludes by saying that her powers will be kicking in now as she wakes up. She turns on her iPod as we see Crypto doing Crypto things as she wakes up yet again. This time she's with Ruthie, asking what this place is that looks like the Predator homeworld. That's what I thought of, guys. We just watched that movie last year. And Kara says that it's her prison. Ruthie offers her suit, as Kara says that it doesn't do anything, as it's just a suit. And Kara then starts freaking out about her dog. So she's not wanting to put the suit on. And as she's saying, it's just a suit, right, Adam?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she doesn't feel super. Now, this big change from the story, they go to a planet that's got a green sun, but they get transported to this planet by Krem's got something that's a magical device that he's been saving for Superman, but he's got to use it on her. So Krem knows about Superman. But when she gets here, there's two different suns. And it wasn't until the green sun started to rise, she realizes what's going on. She starts to get depowered. Ruthie hides her in a cave. And Ruthie has to stand guard and protect her from a myriad of monsters and creatures that are trying to reach them in the cave. And you get a very little bit. And because the book's actually narrated from Ruthie's perspective, it's Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, but Ruthie's telling the story. And sometimes she'll tell you, Kara won't let me tell you what happened next. But she mentions here, you know, I had to do things I never thought I would have to do. And then you see her just covered in like this monster gore and viscera, doing everything she can to just stay up all night protecting Kara. It's an amazing emotional beat in the book that has nothing to do here.
So you would like to have seen that personified here?
There's a number of things they cut out, and I understand they can't do it all, and I understand that graphically they can't do it all, but even the emotional beats we get with Krypton and Argo City, there was about two more major scenes that made her trauma just even more palpable and deep, that I think are even more so than the ones we got, which are very strong and really show some of what she's gone through. But they only get about half of that story out here. But this planet, other than just, hey, we stay on a green planet because of it. I know I'm hampered by a story, but you told me that you adapted the story, so that's not my fault.
Ruthie gives her a pump-up speech thanking Kara for taking her with her. As Kara asks for water, Ruthie heads outside and starts gathering water as she is captured. We cut to Ruthie waking up in a cell as she tries breaking out. Lobo asks Ruthie to wait until after his nap to try and break out. I do like Momoa in this. You know, I gave the character a hard time. I didn't know where the hell the character came from. I didn't know his origins or anything. But I am liking how Momoa is playing.
Yeah, I think he's fine. He's not in the book whatsoever. So,
oh, he's not in the book at all. Oh,
No. That. So they used this film to introduce him into the film universe, but he has no part in the story at all.
Oh, okay. So Ruthie's asking why he's here, and she tells him that she's after revenge. He says that revenge is overrated. He says that he kills for money, not sport, and he never goes back on his word. Krem then makes his way in and tells Ruthie that he thinks Kara is in trouble, as being Kryptonian is not a good thing to be here. Ruthie proves to be a little spitfire as Krem proposes a deal. She gives up where Kara is, and he'll let her live. But when she doesn't, Krem just says that this one is done by the end of the day. We cut to Kara having more flashes of Crypto as Ruthie begs to be let out and taken to Krem. A lot of dreams in this. Not since a Nightmare on Elm Street movie have I seen so many goddamn dreams in a film. She fights her way out as Lobo calls her a little savage. And she tries walking without letting Lobo out, but he talks her into letting him out anyway. Kara is still dying because of the atmosphere as she once again has flashes to her past, including the day when Kal-El gave her the suit, which is still laying there. We then cut to Ruthie and Lobo right outside Krem's as Krem captures her. He grabs a blade and tells her to look at him. She dares him to slice her as they look up and see that Kara has reappeared. Well, that was fast. Here she is. No matter, we have a fun fight here with everyone getting involved. Adam, did you sense a bit of Letterman every time Momoa did his laugh? Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah.
He's like, he. Kara is hit with some kryptonite arrows shot by Krem, who's delighted at how well they worked.
Oh, that's...
You didn't like this, huh?
I can't believe they had the balls to bust out kryptonite in this.
They had the green planet. I mean...
which is... Exactly. You have a green sun. For him to be carrying some kryptonite arrow, I literally went, Jesus Christ. And then, they got to do the CSI shot and show it affecting her blood. And, give it to Bruce.
Krem says that he doesn't like to see her suffer, so he's going to end the suffering. He sends a huge guard out to cut off her head, but he's interrupted and killed by Lobo. Who saw this coming?
Me, because that's the guy that Lobo had the bounty for.
Oh, okay. There we go. Matt, you're kind of quiet. Are you digging this fight at all, this ending here?
No, I'm kind of waiting for the movie to be over. I'm getting next to nothing out of this movie besides redundancy.
See, and this, I thought you guys would have been happy because this is less than 2 hours. We always complain that movies are too long nowadays. I felt this movie went by in a blink. Like, I was not expecting you guys.
Yeah, well, I felt that too because this movie's like a chocolate Easter bunny. Looks just, it's just hollow and empty.
What when you use that analogy? Lobo tells Kara to let Ruthie have her revenge as Kara says it's not that easy. And then the whole base starts blowing up as Kara just goes further and further down until she's in the water. She's
apparently somebody did the Death Star trench run and set off the self-destruct button.
She's now underwater. Like,
did the umbrella company make this fucking factory?
She's now underwater until she lasers her way up and out and her cells start reforming. She then grabs Ruthie and takes her to safety. She flies through the ship, which leaves Krem with Ruthie until the bikes show up. We see Ruthie unsheath her sword as Krem approaches and dares her to put the sword deep in his heart. But Supergirl grabs Krem. There's a huge set of punches as she throws more vehicles out of the way. I'm liking seeing Supergirl finally be super at the end of this. I'm having fun with this.
I'm glad we get to see Supergirl be super. I'm glad to see the action. I still don't understand what Krem can do or his people. Like, I can't stand it. I also really don't like the way this is shot. Like, I know the cinematographer has been used on a couple different things. And even the same shots that were used in Superman, you know, the year before, I can't stand some of these camera shots. And I think they're just piss poor. But I'm happy to have some action. I do think it's fun. I know people just ranted about some of the music choices, but I don't have a problem with it here at the end at all. I'm glad we finally get Supergirl. And when she emerges, when she's in her suit with the sun basking upon her and her hair flowing, I'm like, right on, we get freaking Supergirl. Like, I want this, and I'm happy she's here kicking ass.
Adam, you are shocking me right now because he is the cinematographer of one of your favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is Alex Garland's guy.
Yeah, no, it's I'm good.
I gotta say, like, I've been quiet about the needle drops. When that dumpster divey TikTok-esque nonsense that was Jimmy Eat World's The Middle came on.
That was weird. Yeah.
Whatever that abomination was, I wanted to rip the ears out of my sides of my head, cover them in bleach, and set them on fire.
See, that was me throughout the whole first Guardians movie, and here you guys are right. I was hearing raves about that, and here it's just so funny.
I think I'm the only one that doesn't care about that drop because I don't like the original version of it. So you're getting me some weird slowdown cover. I'm like, okay.
I am so done with weird slowdown covers, though.
Oh, every time I hear that in a modern trailer,
yeah.
I immediately knock it going into the movie.
We have another needle drop as more slow-mo action just keeps going on. I do like this little arm motion that Kara does before she takes off. I thought that was a nice touch. I don't think I've seen that portrayed on screen before.
I thought Zack Snyder was off these projects. Why are we still doing slow motion?
Of course, we need the Michael Bay tires flying right by their faces shot before Ruthie finally has Krem where she wants him.
Hey, I didn't see any Bud Light sponsors on those tires. I think we're okay.
Or robots with balls. Kara once again warns that if she kills Krem, it won't take her pain away. Her heart is still good and open, and her family is with her even now. All this convinces Ruthie to sheath her sword and hug Kara, saying that she just wishes it was all like it was before. That makes two of us, sweetheart. But Kara tells Ruthie to walk away before she changes her mind as Lobo once again shows up. Krem says that she thinks that she saved her soul, but it's Kara who takes her sword and penetrates him, saying the first one was for what he did to Kara's dog, and then she puts it in his neck, saying that's for what you did to that little girl. Have to say, this was pretty brutal for a PG-13 rated movie. I did not think it would go this far.
Two things. One, I thought Lobo was going to kill him, because when we see him there at the end, I'm like, okay, they're going to give it to Lobo. And then before I go, I'll let Matt.
See, this is the ultimate cop-out ending of revenge stories, where it's, I wasn't the one who pulled the trigger, but I still got my revenge, and therefore that makes it okay. This is the problem I have with, I'm going to go to classic literature, The Count of Monte Cristo. It's, now that I've had my revenge and had this blood trail of murder and destruction, I dedicate my life to God. Goodbye. To me, this does not work. It's a writing cop-out.
I don't know, her taking the brunt of it, I felt this, I went with it.
I'm going to have to kill you, but I don't have to save you. Alright, so again, spoilers. Sorry, Garrett. Garrett, I think you would love the comic from a writing
standpoint.
I'm being
sold on it, actually, the more you talk about it.
And in fact, there's a compact version of it, the size of a paperback book, $10.
Okay.
Or the full-size trade paperback is like 15. Maybe I'll send you one. In the ending of the original story, again, spoilers for anybody else, they kind of save each other. Because you think Ruthie's going to do it, then you think Kara's going to do it. Neither one of them do. But they do put him in the Phantom Zone.
Oh, shit. They're bringing that out, huh?
And then the story ends, and it's decades later, and you see this old woman in a home, and you realize you're back on the yellow hills of the original beginning of the story, and it's old woman Ruthie. And then Supergirl shows up, and Supergirl still looks the exact same. And they let Krem out, and Krem is old. And you wonder what's going to happen. And Ruthie just like takes her cane, whacks him on the head, and walks away.
See, I like that.
Now, the thing is, though, the way it's done is kind of in shadow. And a lot of people thought she actually killed him. Because it looks like almost like she hits him with a sword. Because it's done in just shadow. But no, she kind of knocks him out, walks away. There's like, you've spent your time in there. I've lived a life without you. And it's very well done. I don't have a problem with Kara killing him. I almost wish it was a little more violent.
More violent? Because,
oh, I know. She stabs him twice.
Uh-huh. And not only stabs him, like, she plunges that sword in. Like, it's...
Yeah. So, I feel like she has earned the right to kill him. I also feel like Ruthie's earned the right to kill him. But I do think it's saying something that Kara is going to basically scar herself again to help protect Ruthie. And I think that's a beautiful thing, as horrible as it is. I also believe in capital punishment, so I'm asshole. But I love the way the story ended originally, but I don't have a problem with Kara killing him, even though I know it's controversial.
We cut to Kara hovering over Crypto as he wakes up, and she says that she told him they'd be back, and he just leaps to action. We then cut to Crypto and Ruthie playing as Kara says that it's time for them to head out. She asks Ruthie if she's good, and Ruthie says yes. She's going to stay with her aunt. Kara says that her pup crawl days are behind her and that she's real glad that she met her.
She tells Ruthie goodbye, but she didn't finish celebrating her birthday, so Ruthie gets on and they take off. We go back to Metropolis, where Crypto and Kara show up to Kal-El's. He says that he could have used her help, and she says that she's going to stay in Metropolis for a while. Kal-El asks where Crypto is going to stay, as now he's into the chocolate. Does chocolate affect super dogs? I don't know.
He just needs some yellow sun.
I guess. And that's when credits roll on Supergirl. Matt, what'd you think of the ending here?
I thought it was a good wrap-up as far as her staying in Metropolis, but at the same time, I don't feel anything, because I don't really feel they have much chemistry, the two of them. Maybe I'll warm up to that more because of what's coming next, but I don't know. I was, that's kind of my summation of this movie, just eh.
This ending angers me almost as much as anything else in the film.
Wow.
Because they didn't... No, the reason is, though, they don't end on Supergirl. They end on Supergirl and Superman. And on top of it, he has the final line of the Supergirl movie. And I think that's pretty despicable.
Oh, so he's just piggybacking off the argument I made earlier about including him in the first place.
It's just, how the hell are you going to give Superman the last line? To me, that's insulting. But yeah, like, I do want to see them together. But knowing that Man of Tomorrow is going to introduce Brainiac, probably Argo City, and a bunch of other stuff out in space, and Lex Luthor in the frickin' mech suit, let her go be in space. She doesn't need to meet Metropolis. We can bring her back in a different way. But it's, I mean, it ends on a more hopeful note, but I don't know. I just, I can't get over that they give Superman the last word of her movie.
Wow, I didn't think about it like that, but I just thought they wanted to end it on a joke. And I mean, I didn't think it mattered who delivered it, whether it was Superman or Supergirl, but wow.
That's like if at the end of Wonder Woman, if she was at Steve Trevor's grave and Bruce Wayne walks out behind her and goes, "Been there." Then the movie just ends.
All right. Scale of 1 to 10. What do we give Supergirl? Adam, as somebody who, when I posted that I was seeing this, you said, this is going to be an interesting discussion. You weren't lying. I am very curious about your rating here, sir. Go ahead.
Movie that I was looking forward to more than I was Superman, just because I believed in this story and what it could be. The more that I saw this movie beforehand, the more that I saw the trailers, the more I saw them trying to put it out in the press, the more that I had to see Jason Momoa promoting this movie, not Millie Alcock, the more that I was worried. And my worries were justified. They took an amazing story with some of the most astounding visuals in comics. The reason that comics are made, I mean, Bilqui Evely feels like I'm watching George Perez all over again with the lines and the colors and the world building that she did with this book. And this movie turns that into an ugly to look at brown ho-hum story that gets some of the things right. Some of the things are there, but glossed over, introduces Lobo just because you got to introduce him so you can do something with him later. But he plays no role in this film other than to show up and yeah, jump a cigar. It's the definition of, that was fine. I do like Eve Ridley, who plays Ruthie. I think she plays her pretty innocently. I think she's got that doe-eyed innocence that I think is important for that role. I think Millie Alcock does a really good job as Kara Zor-El. I think she could be a much more interesting character than her cousin. So we'll see how that goes. But Krem, just a horrible villain. I mean, this is one of the worst that we've gotten out of, I mean, this, Jesus criminy. It's not Howard the Duck bad, but he's not too far off. This is just a waste, but it's short. It's got some decent action scenes. It's got some emotional beats that do land, but it's just woefully inconsistent, poorly edited, poorly shot. And that's unfortunate because this should have been an absolute delight that people should be heralding. And instead, it pretty much went straight to video because it was 3 weeks and out. I'm giving this a 5. It's watchable. I don't know if it's rewatchable. And I hope that this writer has already lost her job on Wonder Woman. I hope that this director doesn't touch another DC property, and I hope this cinematographer goes back to TV. This just doesn't feel like a movie made for today. This feels like it was made in 2004 and poorly then.
Wow. 5 on 10 from the one who was looking forward to this the most. All right, Matt, as the one who was looking forward to it the middle, what do you feel about Supergirl, sir?
After this movie, I never want to hear the middle ever again. I will say that. Look, I mean, at this point, we've had over 100 superhero movies released in my lifetime, and we've seen the gamut. not just in X-Men Origins Wolverine. We've seen the proverbial gamut of some of the best of what the genre can be. The ones that transcend into just being great movies, and you don't think of the context of people putting on costumes and beating the shit out of bad guys. On the flip side, we've had movies that are so bad that they transcend the opposite way into being some of the most derided movies of all time. I mean, we talked about Howard the Duck last year, which certainly fits the bill. And depending on if you're Adam, he throws Ang Lee's Hulk into that conversation. But unlike Ang Lee's Hulk, this movie doesn't really have a vision, and it doesn't really have any balls. And I'm not just saying that because there's a woman in the cape. This movie is so toothless that I might as well be watching a Rocky sequel or after 10 rounds of boxing, because it feels like it has the weight of having all your teeth knocked out before you even step in the ring. I don't know what this was initially intended to be from inception, if this is truly the vision, or if this was something that Gunn kind of coerced and not sabotaged, but overhauled, I think is the right word. There's potential with Millie Alcott as Supergirl, certainly. I think there's always room to improve, but as far as like an introductory, you know, gung-ho, can't wait to see her again, this didn't fulfill that potential. The biggest knock I can say on this is that I'm largely indifferent. At least a bad superhero movie, there's stuff I can either make fun of or they take big swings. I don't really feel like this did much of anything besides waste almost 2 hours of my time. And I think women deserve better in a genre where it's already challenging enough for them to get great movies in the first place. So I'm going to be nice. I'm going to give it a 4. I've gone full Garrett on this show. And I feel like him and I did some Freaky Friday shit before we pressed record, because now I feel like he's felt for a lot of some of these properties we've done. And sounds like he's going to be more positive than I am, which is not the most common thing on these airwaves. But I just got to call it like I see it. I was not enthusiastic, and I felt like this is just another bullet in the chamber. This genre needs to be put out to pasture.
I hate both you guys so much right now. You know why?
Yes. This makes me so happy.
Because you're making me into the James Gunn apologist. God damn it. As the one who was looking forward to this movie the least out of the three of us, I cannot believe I am saying that I am the most positive on this one. I really enjoyed this movie to the point where after it was over, I wanted to text about it so bad, but I can't text these guys about it because we're going to record a podcast about it. I think when it comes to this, as opposed to the Snyderverse, how the Snyderverse would have handled it, I think this is exactly how it should be. Now, in looking at it, they try to do the human trafficking element. That was just kind of in the background, as I mentioned, but I didn't have too much of a problem with that. I enjoyed this movie. I liked Alcock a lot. Now, did I like Momoa? When I got past the fact that this is like the second character he's played in this DC universe, and I'm like, okay, here we have Chris Evans all over again, which we'll get to soon. I was thinking, okay, well, that's really weird, but I found him to be a joy in this movie. And when it was over, I was actually smiling. I liked seeing the plot develop. I liked seeing Ruthie accept that revenge isn't fulfilling, and she's the one who takes the brunt of it because she's already emotionally damaged anyway. After I saw the end of Superman, before I left to go see this movie in theaters, and I watched Miley Alcock just wander around drunken in Superman's place, and then Adam telling me how much he's looking forward to this story and how emotionally draining it is and how great it is, I was thinking, okay, I'm expecting the worst. But I had a blast with this. I'm going full on 7. I've seen this 3 times since it was released. I'm probably the only one who's seen it 3 times since it was released, and I'll probably watch it again. I enjoy Supergirl. But that leads me, guys, to ask you guys, we always do this at the end of comic book movies, what is the future? This movie bombed notoriously. I saw a trailer for something that looks like a big thing of poo. I don't know what the hell Clayman is. I'm not looking forward to that movie at all. Adam, what are we doing here? What is next for this DC universe?
Jesus, I think Matt wants to slap you for that one more than I, because he and I are both looking forward to Clayface quite a bit. DC Studios, but it's a standalone horror film with Clayface, which, man, Feet of Clay, they've got some amazing stories that have been told with that character, and I think they could do an amazing horror film. And I think this is one of the great things with comics. You can do a genre film, low budget, turn it in for $40 million, probably $60 million, and clear the budget without a problem, knock on wood. Then next year, we're getting Man of Tomorrow. And We know Superman's back. We know Lex Luthor's back. Millie Alcock is confirmed for it.
Oh, she's in it too.
I believe they've confirmed the cast Brainiac. So I think a lot of this film was setting up that because we saw Argo City. We saw it kind of float away. I think we're going to see that was captured by Brainiac. I think we're going to see what happens with that. And we'll see. We got Lanterns coming out here from the time we record this in less than a week. We'll see what happens with that show. I think they're killing Guy Gardner in episode one.
Oh, you think they're killing Guy Gardner, not Hal Jordan?
I think Hal Jordan has been taken over. I think he's Parallax.
Oh, God damn it.
Because I think he killed Kyle. Or Kyle, not Guy, sorry. I think he killed, God damn, yeah. I think he killed Kyle, so.
All right, Matt, what about you? What are you looking forward to in this DC universe?
Well, I'm going to start with Green Lantern because that fart sound is apoplectic of how I feel. I think that show looks like dog shit. I'm so tired of watching this character that I have loved as a comic book reader be nothing but a punching bag in media. Like the 2011 movie, they're still making restitution payments as to how badly that thing fucked up their trajectory.
That movie's not that bad.
Oh, I rewatched it this week. It's terrible.
It's terrible. I mean...
good in it.
Yeah, but it's like finding a kernel of corn in a piece of shit. You know, it's one of those things to where I guess like Superman, you could see the good in everything, but I think it's such the wrong approach for what they should be doing with the Green Lanterns in this continuity. But I'll save my thoughts on that when the show actually comes out. And if it's good, I will gladly admit I was wrong and eat a big thing of crow. But speaking of the crow, that brings me to Clayface, which I am very excited for because we don't have a lot of pure horror superhero films or supervillain films in this case, let alone body horror. I mean, it's kind of a Cronenbergian take on a character that's all about becoming other people. And there's a tragedy in that, you know, the handsome actor who loses the thing that makes the money. I think it's going to be a lot like The Substance mixed with The Fly, mixed with some other things. And it's a character that I've been wanting to see in a movie for the longest time. I complain all the time about recycling the same villains. Matt Reeves' film recycled five villains. So the fact also, I'm supporting a movie that's only like $40 million compared to this, which was what, 120?
180.
180. I mean, that's a sharp reduction.
Yeah.
I don't know where.
Yeah, I don't know where that money went, but...
all Paramount.
They are, you know, and if it's bad, I will say, okay, at least you tried. I'll have the Bart Simpson cake. And I don't know why I'm making so many cake metaphors. I just made two in a row. But that brings me to Man of Tomorrow, which I'm really excited to see Brainiac because he's been the Superman villain I've wanted to see on the big screen for the longest time. I mean, that goes all the way back to Superman 3. I'm not in love with the casting choice, but I can roll with it. But I can't say I care that much about seeing a sequel because I have a theory that I think is going to be proven right, that the message about his parents was distorted by Brainiac.
Me too.
I think that's going to be the big retcon.
I think we said that on that podcast.
Yeah, and I think that's going to take away from one of the aspects of that movie that I thought was actually a change for the better in modern society.
But then again, Supergirl did kind of double down that it was a true statement, so who knows?
Right. So maybe Brainiac's got everybody fooled, but as far as the like continuing adventures of this franchise, I can't say there's a lot that's like genuinely exciting me outside of Clayface. But I think that's because I'm much more of a Batman fan and adjacent Batman than I am a Superman fan. And I got to keep waiting for this part two movie to come out because this thing gets punted more times than a football at a Jets game.
Might as well be Batman Across the Spider-Verse the way this movie gets delayed.
Like, this thing, we'll have had four movies in this continuity. Three of them are Superman related.
Right. And I think that is a problem. Three of the first four are Superman films or Superman family. I don't know how people are going to feel about that. I do wonder, because the closer that it gets to happening, I'm wondering if Robert Pattinson is going to be this universe's Batman.
Which I don't want, for the record. I think I said that on either the Matt Reeves show or Superman. And I also, again, Gunn, either reboot all the way or don't. What is this Blue Beetle nonsense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not done talking DC. We have at least Clayface to go. We have more Marvel coming up, but I'm excited for the rest of the year on this site. As Matt has mentioned in his summarization, we are doing Rocky. So we'll do the first six films. And after that, I'm not going to mention what we're doing, but me and Matt are recording a retrospective straight for Halloween that people are going to like because they've been requesting it since we were at the old place. And we've already recorded a show for that, and we'll announce that when it gets closer, but that's going to be fun. But until next week, when we take our ring outside, hey, look, I'm podcasting. Thank you, boys.
I get scared. I wake up every morning, and despite not knowing what to do, I put one foot in front of the other, and I try to make the best choices I can. I screw up all the time, but that is being human.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Take me home.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Hey! Quit messing around!
I'm not messing around. I'm doing important stuff.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, the Pirates of the Caribbean film series, Indiana Jones, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Predator films, the film adaptations of author Stephen King, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Beetlejuice films, the Mad Max film series, the Planet of the Apes franchise, the Incredibles films, Avatar, and so much more.
Yeah, good. Okay, good. Good work.
No need to thank us, sir, as we will not appreciate it.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
So this guy just flew into Midtown and started attacking people, demanding for Superman to show up?
Yeah, it's all there in my article.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
I called in some friends.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, and Dave.
Whoa, 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 no, Krypton!
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
We have no clue what his actual goal was here.
I think it's pretty obvious the goal was kicking Superman's ass.
Oh, he didn't completely kick Superman's ass.
Pretty thoroughly, Clark.
Scheduling done by Matt.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
It's not too late for either of you.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2026, and any and all music, movie, and sound clips are used for entertainment purposes and review only.
Oh, I don't speak Kryptonian. I never
Shoot. I wasn't raised there, so... I wasn't raised there. Why am I talking louder? Let me help you.
Wrap it up. Let's go.
Part B is also the let's look at this from the female-led superhero movie angle, of which there's not many. A lot of them have been afraid to embrace femininity, god damn it, in both...
Kara is told that since Krim escaped, as the antidote, like that, guys? I got it right this time. That since Krim escaped... Alright guys, here we go. So she's still asking about the brigands as Rob Zombie shows up to dig through some ditches and burn through some witches to slam in the back of his Dragula. What is this? Are there any more fucking actors out there? Why do these
comic books... so proud of that. I gotta stop you right there. You are so proud of that inclusion.
I am. I was very proud. Well, aren't there any more fucking actors out there?
And in their defense, Universal, Bela Lugosi played Dracula and Frankenstein's monster.
That's true. Okay, obviously I'm not familiar with this Lobo character. The last Lobo I was aware of was one half of a group that sang La Bamba. Please, someone enlighten me here. Another line I was very happy with, by the way.
That's why you were mad we waited so long to do this. You wanted to get these lines.
Please, someone enlighten me with this. Squidward drops Kara off as he'll get... Squidward drops Kara off as close as he'll get her. Of course, we need the Michael Bay tires flying right by their faces shot before Ruthie finally has Krim where she wants him.
Hey, I didn't see any Bud Light sponsors on those tires. I think we're okay.
Or robots with balls. I'm rewatching that series, by the way. Oh my!
Yeah, God. I saw that on your letterbox.
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, I know you've had a bad couple weeks, but grass is greener on the other side.
Kara once again warns that if she kills Krim, it won't.